الله الذي سخر لكم البحر لتجري الفلك فيه بأمره ولتبتغوا من فضله ولعلكم تشكرون.
Allah, it is who has subjected the sea to you so that ships may sail upon it at His bidding, and you may seek of His bounty and give thanks to Him. Allah, it is who has subjected the sea to you so that ships may sail upon it at His bidding. For a detailed account, see Banu Israel 17, note 83, volume 5, page 60, Al-Rum 30, note 69, Towards Understanding the Quran, volume 8, page 111, Luqman 31, note 55, volume 8, pages 145, Al-Mu'min 40, note 111, and Al-Shura 42, note 54 above. And you may seek of His bounty and give thanks to Him. That is, God's subjection of the sea for man is in order that he may earn a wholesome livelihood by sea trade, fishing, pearl diving, shipping, and other means.
وسخر لكم ما في السماوات وما في الأرض جميعا منه إن في ذلك لآيات لقوم يتفكرون.
He has subjected to you all that is in the heavens and the earth, all being from Him. Verily, there are signs in this for those who reflect. He has subjected to you all that is in the heavens and the earth. For details, see Ibrahim 14, note 44, Towards Understanding the Quran, volume 4, pages 271 to 2, and Luqman 31, note 35, volume 8, pages 138 to 9. All being from Him. This has the following two meanings. 1. God's bestowal of bounties is not akin to the awkward of some favor by earthly kings. The latter give out what they receive from their subjects. On the contrary, God has created all the bounties in the universe out of which He grants to man what He pleases. 2. God does not have any partner in the creation of these bounties or in making them subservient to man. God alone is their creator, and it is He who has conferred these upon man. Verily, there are signs in this for those who reflect. For those who reflect, there are major signs in God's yoking the objects of nature to serve man's purposes. These signs underscore that the one true God is the creator, master, regulator, and disposer of all objects in the universe. He has bound all these to His laws. His power and wisdom account for making all these objects useful for man's life, economy, comfort, culture, and civilization. God alone, therefore, merits all thanks and gratitude. None besides Him has any role in the creation of these objects or in subjugating them for man's service.
قُلْ لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا يَغْفِرُوا لِلَّذِينَ لَا يَرْجُونَ أَيَّامَ اللَّهِ لِيَجْزِيَ قَوْمًا بِمَا كَانُوا يَكْسِبُونَ.
O Prophet, tell the believers to indulge those who have no fear of any evil days coming upon them from Allah, so that Allah may Himself requite them for their deeds. O Prophet, tell the believers to indulge those who have no fear of any evil days coming upon them from Allah. Literally, it may be translated thus, those who do not expect Allah's days. However, in Arabic idiom, it signifies momentous, historic days. For example, the expression Ayyam al-Arab stands for the eventful days and major battles among the Arab tribes, which have been recorded in memory for centuries. The verse alludes to inauspicious days, when a people are afflicted with God's scourge. They are destroyed in punishment for their misdeeds. In keeping with the same, the verse has been translated thus, those who have no fear of any evil days coming upon them from Allah, so that Allah may Himself requite them for their deeds. Quranic exegetes offer two interpretations of this verse, both of which are admissible in the light of the wording. 1. The believers are asked to indulge the excesses committed by the wrongdoers so that God may reward them for their perseverance, forbearance, and gentleness, and for their enduring persecution in His cause. 2. The believers should indulge the wrongdoers so that God may fully avenge on their behalf. Some scholars take this verse as abrogated, holding that this command was valid whilst the Muslims were not permitted to fight. When they were granted this permission, the above command was abrogated. However, this claim of abrogation is not supported by the Quranic text. Since the believers are directed to indulge these wrongdoers, the message is that they should not retaliate against them, notwithstanding their capacity to do so. This is despite the fact that the unbelievers, being fearless of God, had transgressed all limits of morality and decency. This directive is not discordant with the Quranic permission to Muslims to go to war. Yes, war is to be waged as and when the Muslim state has a valid reason to declare war against an unbelieving people. The above directive, however, relates to the believer's encounter in one way or another with the unbelievers, in which the latter resort to hurting Muslims by all possible means. The objective of the directive is that Muslims should not stoop to the unbelievers' low level. They should not quarrel with them or repay them in their own coin. They may defend their position as long as it is possible to do so within the bounds of civility. However, if the unbelievers misbehave, they should observe silence and refer the matter to God. If Muslims confront them in disregard of the norms of civility, God will leave them on their own to take them on. However, if they indulge God, He will deal with the wrongdoers and reward the victims for their forbearance.
من عمل صالحا فلنفسه ومن أساء فعليها ثم إلى ربكم ترجعون.
Whoever acts righteously does so to his own good, and whoever commits an evil will suffer its consequence. All of you will then be sent back to your Lord.
وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحُكْمَ وَالنُّبُوَّةَ وَرَزَقْنَاهُمْ مِنَ الطَّيِّبَاتِ وَفَضَّلْنَاهُمْ عَلَى الْعَالَمِينَ.
Indeed, we endowed the children of Israel with the book and wisdom and prophethood, and provided them with good things as sustenance, and exalted them above the peoples of the whole world. Indeed, we endowed the children of Israel with the book and wisdom. Hukam signifies 1. Knowledge and understanding of both the book and faith. 2. The ability to work in accordance with the purport of the book. And 3. The ability to decide matters. And prophethood, and provided them with good things as sustenance, and exalted them above the peoples of the whole world. This does not mean that they were granted excellence over others forever. Of all the nations found then, God chose the children of Israel for this assignment. It was their task to uphold the word of God and champion godliness.
وَآتَيْنَاهُمْ بَيِّنَاتٍ مِّنَ الْأَمْرِ فَمَا اخْتَلَفُوا إِلَّا مِنْ بَعْدِ مَا جَاءَهُمُ الْعِلْمُ بَغْيًا بَيْنَهُمْ إِنَّ رَبَّكَ يَقْضِي بَيْنَهُمْ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ فِيمَا كَانُوا فِيهِ يَخْتَلِفُونَ.
We gave them clear directions in matters pertaining to religion, yet they differed among themselves, not out of ignorance, but after knowledge had come to them. And they did so out of the desire to commit excesses against one another. On the day of resurrection, Allah will judge among them regarding what they had differed. We gave them clear directions in matters pertaining to religion, yet they differed among themselves, not out of ignorance, but after knowledge had come to them. And they did so out of the desire to commit excesses against one another. For details, see Al-Baqarah 2, note 230, Towards Understanding the Quran, Volume 1, pages 165 to 6. Al-Imran 3, note 17, Volume 1, page 242, and Al-Shura 42, notes 22 to 3.
ثم جعلناك على شريعة من الأمر فاتبعها ولا تتبع أهواء الذين لا يعلمون.
And then we set you, O Prophet, on a clear, high road in religious matters. So follow that and do not follow the desires of those who do not know. And then we set you, O Prophet, on a clear, high road in religious matters. This means that the task entrusted earlier to the children of Israel is now transferred to the Prophet and his followers. Notwithstanding their knowledge of faith, the former had caused dissensions out of selfish motives. They had divided themselves into many sects. As a result, they were unable to invite others to the way of God. Now, Muslims are charged with the same responsibility. They are required to take up the assignment which the children of Israel had abandoned.
إِنَّهُمْ لَنْ يُغْنُوا عَنْكَ مِنَ اللَّهِ شَيْئًا وَإِنَّ الظَّالِمِينَ بَعْضُهُمْ أَوْلِيَاءُ بَعْضٍ وَاللَّهُ وَلِيُّ الْمُتَّقِينَ.
Surely, they will be of no avail to you against Allah. Indeed, the wrongdoers are friends of each other, whereas Allah is the friend of the God-fearing. Surely, they will be of no avail to you against Allah. If the believers alter the divine faith in order to placate the unbelievers, they too will not escape God's punishment.
هذا بصائر للناس وهدى ورحمة لقوم يوقنون.
These are the lights of discernment for people, and guidance and mercy for those endowed with sure faith. These are the lights of discernment for people, and guidance and mercy for those endowed with sure faith. This book and this Sharia provide light to all mankind, which enables them to distinguish between truth and falsehood. However, only those who believe in their veracity are actually able to derive any guidance. For such people, it is a great blessing and mercy.
أَمْ حَسِبَ الَّذِينَ اجْتَرَحُوا السَّيِّئَاتِ أَن نَجْعَلَهُمْ كَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ سَوَاءً مَحْيَاهُمْ وَمَمَاتُهُمْ سَاءَ مَا يَحْكُمُونَ.
Do the evildoers imagine that we shall make them equal to those who believe and do good, making their lives and deaths alike? How vile is their judgment! Do the evildoers imagine that we shall make them equal to those who believe? The discourse on monotheism concludes here and is followed by a discussion of the hereafter. And do good, making their lives and deaths alike? How vile is their judgment! This is a moral argument in support of belief in the hereafter. Since good and evil radically differ from each other, it is essential that the upright and the wicked should not meet the same end. Rather, the upright should be rewarded for their good deeds and the wicked punished for their misdeeds. Should there be no hereafter, morals would lose their meaning and relevance. In fact, in such an event, one might even ascribe injustice to God. Those given to evil-doing naturally oppose the idea of recompense in the hereafter. They do so because it puts restraint on their unbridled ways. However, God, who is wise and just, cannot be expected to treat the upright and the wicked alike. He will certainly take into account how people spent their lives and how some abused the faculties granted to them. For the upright abide by the moral code, faithfully discharge their obligations, avoid unlawful gains, and suffer losses on account of their commitment to truth and honesty. As opposed to this, the wicked gratify their base desires, refuse to serve God, usurp what belongs to others, and unlawfully appropriate for themselves all that they can. If these two groups have not been alike in their conduct in life, they should not be treated alike after death. If they are treated alike, it would be tantamount to injustice in God's realm.